afternoon. Today is Thursday, November the 20th, 320th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Eureka City School Superintendent Fred Van Vleck.
You're getting that down.
Yeah, yeah. We're getting there. Now, you know, if the Raiders win tonight. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay. Only one miracle a month, huh? And you sucked it up with Measure S. Oh,
well, maybe.
We'll spend a little bit of time talking about that. You may be unaware that it hasn't officially passed yet because the certification process hasn't concluded, but we'll make that presumption that it is gone, and we'll talk about the application of what that means, and also Fred's been able to hustle a couple more bucks out of other areas also, so we'll talk about that as well when we come back.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It is 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Fred Van Vleck. I'm just combining everything together there for you, man. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. Oh, and this one's apropos. Susan Onayan, 1996. Quote, "The first rule of education is that if somebody will fund it, somebody will do it. The second rule of education is that once something is funded, workbooks will follow."
Oh, there is a lot of money in curriculum development. That is true.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes, it is. And you know, it's interesting, too, when you start talking about state-adopted textbooks, which when you start talking Common Core and so forth, the state does adopt textbooks. And the money that goes behind the lobby of the curriculum that's provided for the state is just tremendous.
So how does that manufacture itself? Do they go to the state and talk to the chancellor and go hubba, 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 or the Secretary of Education?
State Board of Education, yes, is where they go.
So how can the lobbyist spend the money to influence the decision of an appointed?
Well, I can't speak with any authority on whether they're influencing the decision, but I can certainly say the ones that are selected, there's a tremendous amount of money that is poured into buying the curriculum that goes along with the...
Oh, you're saying the state, the school districts buying the books.
Correct. The school districts buy the books, but the state approves which books are approved to be used with the state-adopted curriculum.
So what is the leverage that they have if it's not good old-fashioned bribery?
Good question. I couldn't answer that one. So leverage they have is supposedly there's independent folks that go out and read the curriculum and decide on which texts most closely follow the standards. And we're in a state of flux right now as we make that transition from the California state standards to the National Common Core standards, which is a whole other debate in itself.
Does the definition of Common Core have a consistent interpretation?
Well, I would say that it does, and you know, if you're going to use the analogy of the difference between the California state standards and the Common Core standards, it's...
No, I was going to use the definition of clear cutting and how everybody has a different definition of it.
Yeah, so that's true.
So what is, there a target?
Yeah, there is, well, you're...
A black
you're,
and white
You're confusing
target.
The assessment with the actual standards themselves. So there is two sets of assessment systems that go with Common Core. There's one that's being used on the East Coast, and then there's the one that's being used here in the West, which is the Smarter Balanced Assessment.
And as contrasted to the Dumber?
Well, I couldn't even tell you off the tip of my tongue what the East Coast one is, but that's the one that we're using out here in the West, and it's... most of the states, I think we have like 42 states somewhere in that neighborhood that have signed on to the Common Core standards.
So as this is transitioning across, what does that mean to the faculty, to the staff, to moms and dads, to the kids?
Well, it means a transition from what used to be a mile wide and an inch deep to much more focused, more in-depth learning of the students and the teachers reevaluating the actual curriculum that is taught, not just the teachers, but the districts reevaluating the curriculum that's taught in the classroom to align to the Common Core standards.
Okay, well, let's use something a little bit more specific here so I don't get lost in the weeds. History. Okay.
Your favorite subject, I know that.
Yeah, I know, thank you. So at least I can follow my own line of logic on this one. So rather than having everything from poof to today being mastered in history, does it focus into American history or 20th century history or history of the second half of, or American history, world history? How do you master this thing and have a single focus that everybody is trying to understand if we're going deep into a topic?
So if we're going deep into a topic, it would be moving from the knowledge base of what was the date of the invasion of Normandy.
Regurgitation.
For D-Day.
Okay.
To why did we choose Normandy to invade? Why was that the point? What was the strategy behind what the Allied forces were thinking when they invaded? And was it the right decision to make? And analyzing the pieces that go along with that and the events in World War II that led up to that day, that invasion.
Interesting. I just read O'Reilly's book about Patton.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've heard it on Bohannon and a couple of the other shows too, so it's kind of interesting. So it would be the invasion at Normandy rather than why the war?
Well,
in general terms, and some of the economic pressures and the cultural pressures, and you know, who was playing what power game, and why did Churchill get X'd out afterwards? And it would be just kind of a broader base knowledge of it.
Well, I don't know that I'd go that far, but you asked some really important questions in what you just said right there. You asked the why, and it's getting into the why and the how as opposed to the what and the when. And it's the, you know, the analytical pieces that go behind it as opposed to just the remembrance of a date or the remembrance of a time or the pointing out on a map where this is.
So if we structure that out then, real quickly, and said biology, where a lot of there is no why, because nobody knows yet. Different focus in those types of academic disciplines?
Well, I would say in biology there is a lot of the why. Just
how does life begin?
Level. Well, I'm not going to get into that debate.
Okay, fair enough. I know I can shut him down quick. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:25. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Fred Van Fleck. So, Fred, with these moving targets, an evolving target as California standards are changing, what is the role for the local school boards as the federal standards, as the state standards, as you get the various, you know, the lobbying groups, all that stuff? Do school boards have any influence on the curriculum anymore, or is it another area that they really have more influence on?
Well, you're going to make me dive into the bureaucracy of school politics. And it's interesting here in California because you've got things that are more of a federal level, and then you've got things that are on a state level. And so when you're talking about the new Common Core curriculum that's more of a federal level that the state has adopted. But then as you drill down, we get into this new piece called local control funding formula. And the idea behind the local control funding formula, which is only, we're in its second year right now, and it's really, even though it's a second year, it's its first true year this year, the 14-15 school year of implementation. And the idea behind it is to bring more of that control on the local level. I would argue how true the control is coming.
So it might be 10% instead of 5%? I mean, I wouldn't think that a school board could go out and set its own standards independent of everybody else, not paying attention to the UC standards or CSU or the equivalent in whatever the jurisdiction is. So local control, I would think, would have a huge asterisk and a big old caveat down at the bottom of it. Sorry, that's Latin, I know. And we don't teach Latin anymore.
Did you say caviar at the bottom?
Yeah. Oh, good. French. It rears its head.
The reality of local control and where I was going with that is that's the funding mechanism. And where the local board has the control is where they want to put the funds behind the Common Core and how they want to focus on those students that aren't achieving at the level that the local school board would like them to be achieving on the Smarter Balance Assessment, which is assessing the Common Core standards.
So it's more of a priority set?
That's exactly what it is. It's a priority set of how they want to distribute the funds that come to the schools.
So why does it take 12 meetings to determine that each year?
Well, we actually have a meeting every third week, so we have more than 12.
Well, I figured you took like Christmas off and a couple of, you miss every one of them.
Yeah, we have about somewhere in the neighborhood of 16 meetings a year. And when you have an organization that has a $34 million budget, you have to meet on a regular basis to make sure that we're prioritizing those dollars where they need to be prioritized.
Do those change in midterm?
Or is that absolutely
more of a set for the next upcoming budget cycle?
So we have a couple things that drive the budget. The number one thing that drives the budget for Eureka City Schools is a strategic plan, which is prioritized out in its order of what the board sees as the most important priority. And then we have the budget cycle, which is another crazy thing in itself. We have to adopt a budget before the state even adopts their budget. So we're making a guess when we adopt our budget. Has to be adopted and board adopted by July 1st of each year because we run a fiscal year of July 1 to June 30th. And then we have the first interim report, which is a budget adjustment. And then we have the second interim report, which is a budget adjustment. And then we have our third interim, most years, which is another true up. And then we get back to June and we start to cycle all over again.
So about once a quarter, you kind of reshape and kind of put everything back into place?
Exactly.
Do you ever sense that there are wild swings? And I know you've only had a couple rodeos here, but overall, are there opportunities for significant changes at those, I'll call them quarterly updates?
Well, where the opportunities come for the significant changes are like what you talked about a little bit in the beginning of the show here, a few things that I was hoping to talk about today are the outside funding mechanisms.
We'll get to it. We'll be there.
And so if you take unanticipated funds that come in throughout the year, because one of the things that we're charged with is always pursuing additional funds that can come in on a grant basis. And I'm happy to announce that this year we were actually awarded a very abnormal year for Eureka City Schools, over $5 million in grants, actually knocking on the door of $6 million in a grant, in two different grants that will run their course over the next few years. One of them focused on integrating art into the K-8 classrooms, and one of them focused on school climate in the K-12 classrooms.
Tell me that's not an anti-bullying thing.
It's an anti-bullying thing.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Fred Van Fleck.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. 1790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Fred Van Fleck. Are you about to pass me a note here, or are you drawing doodles here, Damien? Yeah, doodles. Okay, good. Wouldn't want to overachieve too regularly here. Fred, before the break, you alluded to the fact that you guys got a couple of grants. Also, we've got Measure S to talk about. So let's kick it off with the grants, because I think that's probably something that would be a little bit of a wow factor. Folks, I think, perceive sometimes that either there's no money supporting the schools, or that there are all these revenue streams we never hear about, and oh my God, it's really, it's something that is more affluent than anything we've ever heard about before. Okay, you know, the truth is going to be between those two somewhere, obviously.
Yeah, but I would agree.
But where do grants come from? You know, and how much do they represent for Eureka City Schools for a typical year?
So this is not a typical year for us to receive grants like this. This is, in fact, unheard of as far as numbers-wise, as far as grants for Eureka City Schools. And like I said, somewhere in the neighborhood of close to $6 million in grants. And it's a tremendous amount of money, and it'll have a tremendous impact. Now, the interesting thing, though, about grants is, and these two grants specifically are federally funded grants, so they come from the federal government, and they are very scripted.
That bastion of reserve.
Very, very scriptive on how we have to spend the money. And so how the grant is written is exactly how we have to spend the money, and we're actually watched on that. So you sit back and you think, wow, $6 million coming to Eureka City Schools. I sure can see a lot of things that $6 million can do for Eureka City Schools. And I
Well, what's the life of it? What is the life of it?
So $3.5 million over, that's the school climate grant, over 4 years.
And the art program?
The art program is over 3 years.
So during that time frame, as you're having to...
In fact, I take that back. The climate grant, I believe, is 5 years.
Five years, okay.
Regardless,
it's pretty healthy. So let's go with the climate one, just because I know I'm going to just have too much fun with that. $500,000 a year.
A little bit more. A year, yep.
Okay. Now, to do that, obviously, as you alluded to, that there's some tracking, some documentation, paperwork probably by the pound that has to be put together by somebody and or a team of somebody's. That's always a question I think most people will ask. Okay, so you're getting $700,000 a year. How much is it going to cost to access that? And was there a match involved at all?
No match. 100% funding coming from the federal government. The charge on this is the implementation of something called PBIS, which is Positive Behavior Interventions and Support, and also restorative practices at the secondary levels, which is the new wave of where discipline has come, ranging all the way back from when we're in school.
Restorative, does that mean the guy that got lost something gets a chance to get a pound of flesh and be made whole?
That potentially, that's part of it. And potentially it's part of the person that was the offender coming up with a different way of figuring out how to get that person not to do it again. You know, it's a pendulum swinging all the way from when we were in school, from corporal punishment to now it's difficult to suspend a kid. It's just, it's a very different time.
It would seem challenging, and I'm sure you guys have got your plan to implement and all that kind of stuff, if there's been so much parental abdication and individual abdication of responsibility. Well, I just did it because I felt like it. I've never, you know, I don't have boundaries at home. I'm pretty much allowed to run free. Mom's working, dad's gone. Drugs are in the house. I can pretty much do whatever I want. So now you're going to tell me what to do? As a 15-year-old, you know, that kind of mentality.
But actually starts younger than that.
Well, I understand, but I'm thinking that that would be very difficult then, I would think. And we could also argue that it's not the responsibility of schools to step in there. That's family. That's church. That's something. That's not government. But this grant is doing that. So how do you implement and not cross the line where, I mean, may as well set up the dorms and have the schools make sure that every kid gets fed every day also at the right time and gets enough sleep. How do you know, you're not a boarding school, but how do you not get to that point with some of these grants?
Well, I'm going to say something that's real popular. We already do feed the kids two meals a day, starting with breakfast and then going on to lunch. And we actually have a supper program now.
Yeah, if they hang out. Yeah, for after school. Yeah.
Right. You know, where is that line? You know, that's a great question. But we do have the students roughly six and a half hours a day. And we want to have as much impact as we can possibly have during those six or six and a half hours a day, because for many of the students, and it's not the students where our personal children come from, but many of those students, the stability in their life is coming to school. And we have to recognize that it's different for many of the students that are out there.
So if that is the case, why don't we blow up the agrarian model and have a 12-month school year and allow these youngsters not only to learn 35% more and maybe be able to keep pace with the international marketplace, but also provide them all these things that everybody says that the schools need to provide them because they aren't getting it at home.
I'll be the first one to go to the polls and vote for that. And here's the reason is because...
That's measure FVV.
Yes, sure. Here's the reason. And I won't be so popular with the students if they had year-round school, would I?
I don't know. The models I see, I was in favor of as a kid. Six on, two off. Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty good. Then you get vacations throughout the year instead of just during summertime, and you don't have these big, long periods of, okay, what am I going to do today, instead of having plans and being able to take advantage of different things throughout the calendar year.
The thing that's so troubling about the way we have school set up right now is the students that benefit from it are just the same students that benefit from getting homework. The students that do well with homework are the students that have a structure at home where they can go home and have the support to complete their homework correctly, because practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. So if you have the support and the help to complete that practice, you'll do well. The problem is with summer, if you have the support and a family that encourages reading over the summer, encourages continuing learning over the summer, those students won't lose progress between the grade they graduated from or completed the year before and the grade they start the following year.
Yeah, if you're reading and you're engaged, you don't slip back. And I would think that that would be the biggest argument for a 12-month calendar is that, okay, you just have a Christmas break off.
Absolutely.
And you may have fallen back a little bit, but it's only 5% instead of 50%.
A full grade level. Because students that completely check out during the summer vacation, the research consistently shows that they lose 75% of their previous year.
So why are we continuing with this goofy model that's in place?
Well, I think if you get to the end of the day and you really look at it, it's funding.
But it'll be the same amount. I mean, the teachers are paid, the staff is paid, everybody's paid.
Teachers are paid for
12 months, but compressed into a 9-month, right?
No, they're paid... The teachers are paid on a positive basis. They're paid for the days they work. So, like, for instance, Eureka City Schools, teachers are paid to work 185 days. And that's what they get paid. They get a daily rate for 185 days.
Okay, so the application of those 185 days then?
It's potentially you could spread out the 185 days and put the breaks in between there. But, again, I think that
it may not make the full year.
Right.
So there may be a 3-week summer break or 4-week. Which actually would make sense if you had any major capital improvements staggered around the various schools at different times.
Right. But, you know, the model of year-round school is the best model for learning. It absolutely is.
Well, most other countries are using it. And they also define their week as Monday through Saturday, too.
Yeah, I don't know enough about other countries' education systems.
Get out of Humboldt County, man. You learn things, I've been told. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:44. We'll be back with more from Fred Van Fleck.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It is 3:48. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, Measure S, as it stands now, has passed with a little bit more than the 55%.
55.79%.
So what do you do now?
Well, it's interesting. Absentee ballots, we need 55%. There's a lot of misconception out there what it takes to pass a school bond. It takes 55%, not just a simple majority like some of the other measures that were on the ballot. And absentee ballots, we had 51% in favor. Poll day, we had 60% in favor. And so we have about 2,600, somewhere we're saying between 2,500 and 3,000. We don't know the exact number of votes, provisional and absentee and mail-in yet to count. And with that number...
Or at least to be released, the figures.
Correct.
I bet you they've been counted.
Correct. Yeah. Released and certified. And we've tracked the number and looked at it, and we need to run 52% in favor of Measure S in order for it to pass. So if you go strictly on the absentees, it would fail. If you go strictly on poll day, it would certainly pass. But the research, and I've looked at a lot of this recently, clearly shows that the absentees turned in on poll day generally trend with the way the polls vote. So the likelihood of a passing is pretty high, although I certainly would not guarantee it.
So you don't want to jinx it is kind of what you're saying.
Well, the votes are what they are right now, no matter what I say. So.
Well, I do understand that. However, yeah. So as soon as certification occurs and it stays as it is, do you guys start putting wheels in motion by January 1, or is this something that goes into effect later on?
We have actually already started putting wheels in motion, and we already started putting wheels in motion right after Election Day. And the reason for that is we have a project over at the Lincoln campus that has a state architect expiration date coming to us in January. So if we don't do the background now, we won't get to start it.
Great timing. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Fred Van Fleck. Think positive about the Raiders. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.